Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is filmmaker, essayist, and critic Priyanka Kumar. And we're talking about her new book, Conversations with Birds. Priyanka, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thanks, Mark.
One of the first sentences in this book is really fascinating to me. Birds are my almanac. Now, you don't just simply mean that they help you mark the seasons, although they do that. How do birds expand on that sentence?
Sure. I think birds help me experience the seasons. Mark, I think we're living in a world today, this ultra-digital, device-filled world, where the risk is that we are not, we're becoming so disconnected and isolated that we are not experiencing our lives in the deep sense that I think it's possible to experience life. And so birds pull me out of all of that, all of those devices and that digital world, and really pull me, tug me into nature and, you know, just be there and experience the seasons, like in the winter. And I make a special effort to keep hiking in the winter, no matter how cold or snowy it is. And it does get pretty cold and snowy in New Mexico.
Hey, I live in Massachusetts. You don't know from cold and snow.
I'm sorry. Forgive me.
We're in the center of Massachusetts. We are way wicked cold and snowy.
Well, the beautiful thing about New Mexico is, as cold and snowy as it can sometimes get, we still, you know, are sunny over, I think, 300 days of the year. So,
Wow.
So, yeah, I shouldn't complain. You know, the chickadee is my constant companion in the winter. And so no matter what the season is, there are birds that I associate with that season, and those birds are with me when I'm out in nature, you know, whether I'm focusing on trees that day or just the landscape or thinking about ecosystems. Mm-hmm. I feel like the birds are always with me, and in that sense, they truly help me experience the natural world in a deeper way.
Now, your young childhood in Assam, you were very tightly connected to nature. I loved reading those sections where you just sort of went out and wandered around in these bamboo forests and stuff like that. But when you came to the United States, it was a struggle for you to reconnect to the natural world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it was a fearless childhood, and I didn't realize what a gift I had until I lost it, because I was really out there wandering, in, as you said, in bamboo forests. And one of my greatest pleasures back then was collecting snake skins.
I love that. And, I'm a huge fan of snakes. I love snakes.
Me too. But I was more fearless about them back then than I am now. it never actually struck me that you know, there was a problem. I never talked to my parents about this passionate hobby of mine. And I had a little cave where I would stash them. And I just found them to be so beautiful. And I felt that I responded to these shed snakeskins with all my heart and soul. You know, this is an area, Mark, that scientists now consider to be one of the top biodiversity hotspots on the planet.
Yeah,
and I had the good fortune of spending my childhood there and just basically being outdoors all the time. We definitely didn't have a TV or anything else. So, you know, outdoors is where all the excitement was. And I took full advantage of it. And then when we moved to Toronto in Canada when I was a teenager, I really felt that it was a big, you know, people talk about culture shock. It wasn't so much a culture shock for me. It was just a landscape shock.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I was, of course, you know, I soon entered the University of Toronto for my bachelor's, and I, of course, got busy doing all of that, but there was this profound sense of loss, that something very deep that had connected me to the planet was just gone, and I felt unmoored. And when I came to California for my master's, University of Southern California, that's when I took advantage of the wonderful landscape there to get out there and hike my heart out. And yet I felt like I couldn't reconnect in the way that, you know, I was connected when I was a kid in the Himalayan foothills. And interestingly, it's only when I started watching birds in a serious way that I found an entry point into the natural world. And, you know, have been a lifelong naturalist ever since.
It was spotting a Western tanager at a very serious critical juncture in your life. It, it was a near-death experience. That was the entry point. That was sort of the switch that changed your the way that you were approaching nature. Can you just, I don't want to take away anything from reading the book, but you were hiking and were having serious problems while you were hiking. And you had to come back down.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't realize it at the time because I was so used to getting out there and hiking all day and, you know, backpacking and all of that. Had, you know, spent a lot of time in Yosemite doing that kind of thing. So it just happened at a particular juncture in time when my husband Michael and I, I was teaching at University of California, Santa Cruz, and we just happened to zip over to the Sequoia National Park. Well, it's about 3 hours away, and camped there overnight, and just the next morning got up on the trail and kept hiking and hiking, and we're going straight from sea level to 10,000 feet, and I didn't realize, because it had never happened to me before, that I was suffering from altitude sickness, a severe case of altitude sickness. And finally, after several hours of hiking, we did turn around. Our plan was to backpack for maybe a week or so. And did turn around. We're fortunate to find a campsite, but once we, you know, set up the tent, I just completely collapsed, and there was no way to get any help. And it was a truly dark, you know, few hours for me, where I believed that I was not gonna make it, and. You know, I'm not going to ask anyone else to believe that the universe sometimes speaks to you, but it certainly happened to me in that moment that this gorgeous Western tanager flew to Ponderosa Pine that was right next to our tent site, and Michael urged me to, you know, open my eyes and look at the bird, and finally I did, and it was as though... it brought back memories of my childhood in India, the mangoes that my dad used to home for us.
I know the color of Western tangers, for people who don't know it. They're really reminiscent of mangoes.
Mangoes, yeah. It's such a luscious, delicious bird.
And, it is.
And it, and it, it really, I really think that, I believe that it brought me back from the brink, just the heart opening, soul-opening beauty of that bird, and it gave me the bit of oxygen that I needed to get through that really dark moment and you know, make it through the night. Well, I'm really grateful.
And you describe it really well, as, and this has been a lot of people's similar experiences. There's a moment where you realize all these things have been in the environment all the time. I just never bothered to look.
Yeah, yeah.
It changes your perception of the place you're walking through.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, it really is a matter of seeing. I mean, I think of, you know, these eyes that we have as a miracle. And you know, every day I remind myself to not take things for granted and to really be out there and see the trees and the landscape and the birds in a fresh way. And I know for me, that's a deep source of joy. But I think that comes from being able to just pull back and not get too caught up in the everyday world, and just pull back and just be grateful for this beauty that we have around us. And then from there, of course, there comes an impulse to protect this beauty.
Yes. One of the amazing things about birds, although you mentioned lots of other aspects of the natural world in this book, but birds are around us no matter how cold, how snowy, how hot it gets. There's always birds, even here in Massachusetts. There's winter birds, and they do interesting things, which you talk about a lot in the book. You fell in love with flickers, for instance, and people who have not seen the nuptial displays of flickers are really missing out. Because it's pretty crazy.
Flickers, I mean, they're just gorgeous birds. I fell in love with them while I was still living in Southern California. And I would try to find, and it's, you know, hard to do there, shady canyons to go bird in, because I didn't want to miss out on birding in the summertime either. And I discovered flickers in these canyons. Kind of around the edges of Pasadena and the Arroyo Seco area. And it was a refuge for me, and it was a great opportunity to observe these birds. And they're very charismatic and active birds, and I've observed them in all stages of their lives. But what's particularly stunning is their courtship display. And I would dream about it. It's so beautiful. And where they do this dance.
Yeah.
And it's just unbelievable. I mean, it's certainly worthwhile you know, waiting long afternoons in a canyon to see that. And then to my delight, when I moved to New Mexico, I realized that it was a prominent bird here, and it's a bird that is a resident. It's a winter resident, and so and it doesn't seem to lose its coloring much.
No,
so it's beautiful to see it, you know, in the winter time, and I've seen it do that same courtship display, which perhaps it also does for relationship maintenance.
Much like we all do.
Right. Yeah, so they're very relatable birds.
That's
are,
right.
I find.
Now, there's so much you pull into this book, and that's what the real pleasure of reading Conversations with Birds is. I want to ask you what rasa is.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So rasa is a Sanskrit term, and it means juice, literally and also metaphorically. And we were talking earlier, Mark, about how when I moved to the West as a teenager, I experienced a profound sense of loss. And later, as the years went on, I realized that part of what I was missing is rasa, is that sense of a juicy life. And it took a while to parse out what it was. You know, a lot of it was the natural world. But I think just in the same way that I had this relationship with animals in India, with the jackals that I would hear howling every night, from, you know, in the foothills, or with those snake skins that I was collecting, and it was adding this strain of music. Rasa is also used, as I mentioned in the book, I developed a lovely connection with Ravi Shankar.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he taught me about rasa and music, which I'm very grateful for. And so there was a strain of music in my life that the natural world was like, there was the symphony playing in my life, and I it was very harmonious, and the sense of, you know, time just dissolving in a beautiful way, and this feeling of really living my life, and all of that that harmony seemed to be off when I was here, and it came back after I discovered birds. And I think birds brought that rasa back into my life, that sense of delight. And I just see a flicker flying by, flashing its red wings. And that sense of that spring of joy and, you know, wow, waking up in the morning with a smile and wanting to get out there and look at these birds. And I think it really reconnected me back to this, you know, glorious planet that we live on, and made me feel like, in a way, it doesn't matter that I'm no longer in the foothills of the Himalayas. I can even... you know, I'm close to the Santa Fe National Forest, so try to make the best of it.
I want to mention that there are different kinds of rasas, right? There's 8 different kinds of rasas, and you actually, as an artist, as Ravi Shankar talked about, he decides which one he wants to emphasize in his artistic work.
Yeah.
By the way, that section when you went to interview Ravi Shankar was hilarious.
Because, oh, okay.
Well, you got to do that. You're making this documentary film, and you're a filmmaker, and right. you expected to interview him for hours, and his wife goes, well, you've got 15 minutes.
Right. And I think, you know, given that, I think it says a lot about Ravi Shankar and rasa that he had in him.
That's right.
You know, the interview just went on and on. And then we, you know, had this... amazing time just discussing philosophy over chai.
Oh, wow. I'm so jealous. That's amazing.
And you know, but you have to hand it to him that he didn't just, you know, say goodbye and that's goodbye. He started to invite Michael and me to his concerts, and then we'd talk about music after. So there's that rasa, that really, that sense of, you know, delight and connection to life. And really, you know, someone like him who was already beyond iconic at that point, but connecting to a younger artist. And, you know, he seemed to get as much delight out of it as I know I did. and you're really discussing life. And this is what I come back to, is that, you know, I wonder what it's doing to us that we are living such... I think, relatively speaking, isolated lives.
Well,
now,
especially after COVID.
Especially after COVID, yeah. I mean, there's a mental health crisis in the country,
yep.
And I think that I feel one of the reasons I wove this beautiful concept of rasa in the book is that I feel it's quite relevant to our times, and that, you know. To use a digital metaphor, we need to plug into that, and I think it helps us live our lives it to the fullest, and with you know, the sense of delight, the sense of smile, despite everything, despite all the struggles.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is filmmaker, essayist, and critic Priyanka Kumar, and they're talking about her new book. It's really a wonderful read. Conversations with Birds. Now, it's not only birds that sort of wander through this narrative. Bobcats seem to pop up a lot in your life. Now, I happen to love bobcats. And any day that I see a bobcat, which is not often, I consider that a great day.
Mm.
But for some reason, you attract bobcats.
Yeah, and I'm... I'm not sure what it is about me, Mark. I seem to attract all kinds of wildlife, but yes, especially bobcats. And they hang around our place and seem to look me in the eye in a way that's kind of uncanny. It really makes me pause. And, you know, one of the first things we did when we got here is we took off the fence that was around our property. And for me, that's, you know, a literal taking out of the fence, but also it had more significance. I really wanted, you know, a wildlife to be able to just roam through the property, and I can't tell you how much magic it's added to my life. And,
wow.
And so the bobcats began to come, and right from the get-go, I never felt any fear. I felt like I deeply believe that you know we're living, a lot of us today are living in areas that have traditionally been you know, the habitat of big mammals such as bobcat, coyote, even mountain lion. And so I think that we can make a big difference by kind of growing urban habitat and opening it up to wildlife. And bobcats, in my experience, have been, you know, really these elegant, gorgeous animals. And
it's magic to see one.
It's absolutely, yeah. And last summer I saw it walk by carrying a cub in its mouth. And, you know, just really heart-stopping beauty there. So I know it's added a lot to my life to be open to these animals. And I also feel that as a naturalist, I need to observe them over long periods of time, often over several years, before I can start to put their stories together. So I really appreciate the fact that I've been out there enough and, you know, spent enough time in forests to have these kinds of close encounters with an animal like a bobcat. It's very special to me.
There's so many wonderful parts of this book, and a lot of visiting different wildlife areas. The Bosque del Apache in New Mexico, an area where huge numbers of sandhill cranes and snow geese overwinter, and you make repeated visits there. I've never been, which I've really kicked myself for, but that sounds like a magical place.
Oh, yeah, and you should absolutely visit it. For me, it's soon after I moved to New Mexico, I knew I wanted to go there. It was the first thing I wanted to do, and it's really become, you know, a biannual pilgrimage to go see the sandhill cranes and just the numbers. It's overwhelming, and, you know, to think that... you know, we still have, thankfully, we still have places where we can see these birds in the hundreds and the snow geese in the thousands. And I also go there to look for bald eagles.
Oh, yeah. There's an amazing boat trip you take in this boat in a really cold day to hope to see a bald eagle with your children.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, it's just that magnetic tug, and I find it to be irresistible. I'm sure you've experienced that many, many times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you know, what I'm trying to do in this book is storytell about these some of these encounters that have been for me, extraordinary and really special on my birding journey. So yeah, you know, being out there with the kids, but hopefully that's also an education for them.
It is.
You know, it opens their eyes. I mean, recently my older daughter went on a field trip to the watershed up here, and then she just happened to see a bald eagle carrying a fish, and she was just, you know, floored. But it just, while everyone was exclaiming how cool that was, she'd of course seen bald eagles tons of times before.
So she was a pro. She was a pro.
So yeah, we have to pass those skills on to the next generation.
That's absolutely true. How do you recommend people start to work their way back into the natural world? And actually, that's a tough question because we only have a few minutes left. But it's to get out there and to look seems to be where it starts, to really, really look and to maybe pick up a field guide or go on a bird trip. That you went on a lot of bird trips with Audubon societies and other bird groups, and that really allowed you to learn a lot.
Certainly, and that's what I did in the early days, is I went on a lot of bird trips. And then after that, I just kind of took off on my own. It was important for me to be to just have some solitude and be able to spend long amounts of time just observing the birds. So I largely do it on my own or with my family now. But I would say that I know for me it's been important to be out there every single day. And that might seem like a big ask to suggest to people, but I really think it's a worthwhile endeavor to even if you're an area where you can't exactly walk out to kind of the natural world, but even if you're going to a city park or something, but really developing this relationship, which is not once a month or once a week, but really being out there every single day, and it's so rewarding. Even if you're not looking at birds, but are just getting to know the trees in your area.
Yeah. Priyanka, I'm afraid we're out of time. I could talk to you for hours about this book and your experiences. My guest tonight has been filmmaker, essayist, and critic Priyanka Kumar. And we've been talking about her new book, Conversations with Birds. There's a lot in this book. It's a wonderful read. Priyanka, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Mark.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.